This is a Wild Games Production podcast.
You remember.
Roll your stealth roll?
Game books, pencils, pizza, cheese puffs, and a hell of a lot of dice.
And the dragon woke up.
Roll for initiative.
This is the Roll for Initiative podcast, where 1E is the place to be.
The Roll for Initiative podcast. We're back for volume 8. I'm Vince. I'm sitting with Nick.
How you doing, man? How you doing?
And back for his triumphant return, DM Matt.
Hello, everyone.
Yay.
Our buddy Matt is back.
Yay.
Back from Gen Con.
Yep. He put up his special interviews. You'll be hearing those in little chunks here and there as special inserts. We'll throw them in between these episodes. I think one is up as of these episodes right now, or at least two should be up at this point, but we'll see.
Yes, we did one. I talked with Cherise from Japanime Games. They actually import board games from Japan to the U.S., so they're taking the board games created and made over in Japan, bringing them over here. And they had some releases that caught my eye because they have three Robotech board games coming out.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yes, I got to take a look at two of them there. One of them's like a card game where you're all Veritech fighter pilots and you're trying to one-up each other and blow up the most Zentradi. The other is more of like a Castle Panic-style board game where instead of a castle, it's the SDF-1.
Oh, cool.
And it even has a cardboard SDF-1 that you build. So when it goes into fighter mode, you build that. So I have pictures of all of that in the posting for that show. So
I want one where the goal is where you throw Lin Min May out of an airlock.
Well, there's also a third one coming out, and I couldn't get much information about that one. So maybe that will be your airlock.
No.
Lin Min May. If they ever
because
did
Lin Min May is annoying as fuck.
Well, if you took the Battlestar Galactica game that Fantasy Flight made, but just reskinned it Zentradi and Robotech, you could do that.
You pretty much got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Margaret Weiss Games made the Battlestar game.
Yeah.
Well, Fantasy Flight made one way back out of print and board game.
Okay.
The board game.
Oh, okay.
The board game. I do remember that.
I have the board game, I think.
I still remember when the two Zentradi, when they got shrunk down in an episode, you're looking at a Lin Min May doll wound up, and one of them goes, "Is it a weapon?"
Yes.
It's like the best line. Is it a weapon? I don't know. God. Now I want to watch Robotech.
Oh, yeah, you could.
You want to watch Robotech or Macross?
Yes. Okay. Don't confuse me.
It gets a little convoluted.
I know the Harmony Gold Robotech. That's what I remember.
That's what you need to know.
Yes, because the Harmony Gold Robotech is actually a couple different series of Macross.
Stuck together. I know. Yeah. I know.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Robotech podcast. I'm your host, Vince, sitting alongside Matt and Nick. And this is episode number one of a brand new
now
podcast.
Now you know how I feel when you talk about wrestling.
Speaking of wrestling, SummerSlam's... No, I'm just kidding. Roman Reigns is the champion. Boo. Anyway.
Shut up.
So we got an email from Benjamin Winkler. No relation. Don't start, Nick.
Hey.
I knew you were going to do that. And he wrote us why Eric complains. Whoa. He says, "I've been listening to your podcast recaps of the classic Dungeons & Dragons cartoon episodes, and you repeatedly noted that Eric's complaining about Dungeon Master's cryptic advice, arguing that nobody else seems to appreciate the danger they're in, etc., seems reasonable and logical under the circumstances. Was wondering if you were aware of the complainer is always wrong script requirement that the showrunners were stuck with to send the right message." And he gave us a link for an article that explains from one of the writers' point of views how they were handed down this whole edict of how they had to make Eric the complainer in the group, because at that time the whole Get Along Gang show was on, and there was a whole...
Oh, yes.
So it was one of the...
I did not know that. That is weird, wild stuff.
Thank you,
Mr.
Carson.
Did you know that, Ed?
Yes,
that is crazy, kooky stuff.
Yes, sir.
But it makes a lot of sense. And
yeah, but it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's just like nothing ever dies. Yeah. Nothing ever really even gets hit by like a weapon. Unless right. it's like a something very, at least nothing humanoid anyway.
And yet there are episodes in this series and others where you kind of like, how did those 3-4 seconds get past the censors?
Right. Well, we can ask all those questions and more when we have a special guest coming up very soon.
Do tell.
I don't know. Should I tell? I don't know, Nick. What do you think? Should I tell everybody?
I don't know.
All right. Well,
it's up to you. It's your show.
It's our show. Stop it. No,
when things go wrong, it's your show.
Okay. So it's going wrong right now?
Derailed it. Yes, it is.
I sent a message to legendary cartoon writer and creator of various 80s cartoons, Buzz Dixon, who Ooh. You may be familiar with because he was one
he
of the...
He did the last episode I covered.
Yes, he did. And he also did... I think he did some more later on, but he also did G.I. Joe. Was yes, like one did. Of the head honchos for G.I. Joe. He did Inhumanoids, among things. Plus a bunch of other cartoons if you look up his name. I mean, his list is on and on and on.
Alvin and the Chipmunks, Tiny Toons, Buck Rogers.
He did Tiny Toons?
Yeah.
Sweet!
Visionaries, I mean, G.I. Joe the movie. He was a consultant on G.I. Joe the movie and My Little Pony the movie.
I just watched not G.I. Joe. Wow, I was thinking Transformers, but G.I. Joe the movie.
Yeah.
Cool.
He has an interesting story about how he got the Cobra Law name, and he'll tell us. But maybe he'll tell us about that if he has some time. But I invited him on the show to talk about his experience with the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon and to tell us the stories about how he was at Gygax's house over in California at the time and how they were playing miniature Dungeons & Dragons with G.I. Joe characters in the backyard and how they made up stats for it and stuff and blah, blah, blah.
You missed one of the most important ones.
What?
He did Thundar the Barbarian.
Yes, Thundar the Barbarian as well.
Yeah.
I loved Thundar the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Loved that cartoon. Loved it.
Right. We all did. It's a great cartoon.
I mean, if you remember Gamma World, that was Thundar the Barbarian, man.
Yeah. Definitely. All righty. Cool. RFIstaff@gmail.com is our email address, and you can write us there, or you can head over to facebook.com/RFIpodcast and leave us a message there. But we'll be right back after this. Are you enjoying the show you're listening to right now? Great! Why not head over to patreon.com/WGP and support that show for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month goes a long way to helping support the network of Wild Games Productions. Again, that's patreon.com/WGP. Thank you. Alrighty, we are back and we're going to head right into this episode, episode number 10. The Garden of Zin. Original air date, November 19th, 1983. Getting closer to Thanksgiving at this point.
Written day after my birthday.
Aww.
And I still have Halloween candy.
You do?
Not from then, but at that time I did.
Oh, I was going to say. It's like, wow, Nick, you're really saving that candy.
Hey, that's collector's stuff, man.
Hey, candy corn would keep that long.
Ugh. Ugh. Ranks right up there with circus peanuts. Yeah.
Yes. A young Nick at this time was eating his Fruit Loops and his Frosted Flakes.
Together.
Ugh. What?
Hey, you ever had it where, you know, you had a box of cereal and there's like not enough to make a bowl and you have another box and then make another bowl, so you kind of mix them together?
No, I never mixed Fruit Loops and Frosted Flakes. I would vomit if I did that.
No. If I ever hit that, when I make that bowl before I get to that little last bit, I'll just make an extra large bowl.
Yeah, just make an extra
large
bowl.
Go that way. I'm not mixing my cereal.
You're a little kid, man.
You don't cross the streams and you don't mix your cereal.
Okay, sorry.
Geez, next he's going to tell us that when he grew a little older, he put coffee in his cereal instead of milk.
Now that's just gross.
Yeah, I know, right? I know people that done that. I'm like, ugh.
Ooh.
Cheerios and coffee. Yeah, this was another episode written by Jeffrey Scott.
Hey, great Scott.
He's quite busy, Mr. Scott.
Mm.
IMDb rated this 7.7 out of 10. Seems like all these episodes are in the 7s out of 10. We only had one that reached 8 so far.
But still, very highly rated, most of them.
Yeah, and it's not like this is like one or two reviews. It's like 40, 50, in that range of reviews. So people that are reviewing this have a general consensus of what they think this episode is rated. So in the 7 to 8 range, all these episodes, which means classic good. Not perfect, but really good. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, summary for this episode. Bobby is bitten by a poisonous creature, and an antidote can only be found at the Garden of Queen's Inn. Will his friends be able to find it in time and convince the queen to give them the cure? Oh, boy. So the episode opens up with Eric and Bobby chasing this a creature that's rather small with wings, trying to grab it.
Yeah, like a little green dragon, it looked like.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out what it was, but probably was
it a Pokemon? I don't know.
Possible. Oh, God.
Yes.
Who knows?
According to the Wikipedia, it's a dragon turtle.
Okay.
No, but that's later on, what you're thinking.
That's later on. That's
okay, that's the same. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is more the Godzilla villain.
This is the little creature they're trying to catch as it gets trying to fly in the air. They're trying to find food at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
So they want to get the creature, and then they're like, quick, grab before it gets away, and the thing goes into a hole in the ground, and they both go plunk right on top of that. Then Uni comes over and pretty much laughs in their face. And give us a Uni laugh there, Nick. And then we hear the group say that they're disappointed, and then there goes lunch, and Hank mentions we'll be eating berries again. So I guess they were eating something. I mean, good job, leader.
Way to go.
Diana's nowhere to be found, but then the camera pans over to her near a small lake. Well, she has like a makeshift fishing rod. It looks like a stick with a rope on it, pretty much.
Pretty much.
She has something caught on it, and she needs help. So Bobby and Hank run over to assist, and the three struggle to pull it out of the water. And it's this huge creature, which is the dragon turtle, but it's not really the
Eric's
one.
Wishing for shrimp cocktail.
Yes. Yeah. It's the dragon creature, but the dragon creature does the dragon turtle, excuse me, from the Monster Manual. Well, I'll tell you in a second why I think it's different, but anyway.
I don't think this is a dragon turtle.
They list it as that, though, which is weird. But yeah, if you look at the script and everything, it says dragon turtle. So
there's no shell, though.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so it pulls out of it, and it's this giant, like, turtle-like creature, and Sheila obviously goes invisible as soon as she sees it. Diana drops what she's doing and gets away because the creature tries to grab her because Hank just shoots a bolt at it and it kind of goes and drops her. Bobby steps up to battle the creature like he always does, but of course Sheila distracts him and pulls him back.
Hold my beer.
Yeah.
I got this.
Just as he's about to get chomped on, she goes, Bobby, no, and pulls him back. And Bobby's forearm gets, like, nibbled on. You see, like, a little red mark on it.
Gets a little scrape.
Yeah. Bobby gets
it's only a flesh wound.
Bobby gets rid of the water creature by bashing it with water. I'll let that sink in for a minute.
It's a big tidal wave.
Yeah, I'll let that sink in for a minute. Anyway, the creature runs away
makes
all
no
set.
Sense. I agree.
The group asks if Bobby's okay. He says, it's just a scratch. I feel okay. And then passes out into Sheila's arms. I think I smell an Emmy award coming for that.
Yes.
So spectacular. Yes. Horrible scene. Presto speculates, I'll pause right there on that, that the monster's bite is poison. And the group heads off to find Dungeon Master because he has all the answers. Right. It's like, let's just go find Dungeon Master and just go walking off.
Right.
No, he generally finds you.
I know.
You never find Dungeon Master. He finds you.
Yes. And you'll notice in this entire episode, they always say it was poisonous, but they never say what would happen if they don't find the antidote.
The only thing I can
actually
think of is
it's
gonna
not
die.
Poison. Technically, it's venom.
Well, yes.
He's poisoned by the venom there.
Yes, he's poisoned by the venom, but they never actually say, well, if we don't find the antidote, what will happen to Bobby? They never bring that up.
I think I like your original thought. We'll never find the episode. That's probably a better thought.
Yes, it is. We will never find the end of this episode. But yes, they avoid saying, well, if we don't find this, he'll die. Never gets uttered.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's part of the whole...
Whatever, it doesn't really... It's a cartoon.
It's like that thing about Eric where he has to be the curmudgeon-y.
Nobody dies. It's a cartoon in the 80s. Shh.
Right.
So what was this creature? We're all debating it based on the script, based on Wikipedia. And if you look at the original script, it's a dragon turtle from the Monster Manual, but dragon turtles do not have a poison bite.
No.
So what could we speculate this creature is then?
Gamera?
Because Gamera is really neat.
And made of turtle meat. Full of meat.
We all love Gamera.
Gamera has shell, though.
Yeah,
true.
Stop maybe it, Nick. A mutation of them? The shellless Gamera?
Well, then they're playing Hackmaster. It's a poisonous variant.
Right. There you go.
Your post-apocalyptic theory is coming true, Nick. Now the creatures are poisoned.
They're mutated.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, man.
It's like the glowing of Bobby's club isn't actually magic. It's radiation.
Oh. There we go. Matt found the loophole.
I don't know.
All right. Nick's not buying it yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. All right.
The verdict isn't out on that.
Cut to the forest where we can assume the group has been walking for a while with Hank carrying Bobby, and then Bobby mumbles, "I gotta rest," as Hank nods and places him on the ground next to the tree. As I scream at the screen, "Rest from what? You are being carried." Hank needs the rest.
Like I said, does he need a pillow?
Yeah, does he really need a pillow? I mean,
he need his baba, his blankie?
No, that was last episode.
Oh. We find out that at this point, Bobby has a fever, and Eric wonders, is there a local drugstore around here? Yes. There's a CVS right around the corner from that tree, buddy. But no, around that tree is, guess who?
Let me guess here. His name starts with dungeon, ends with master?
Yes. Who comes from around behind the tree and says, "No, there is not." So he knows what a drugstore is.
Told you, post-apocalyptic Earth.
And Sheila's like, "Fix him with your magic. Make him better." And then the dumbest explanation.
He's like, "Damn it, I'm not a druid."
Dungeon Master gives us some weird answer like, this is nature's doing, and my magic can't help him. It's required.
Damn it, I'm not a druid.
It requires a natural remedy, which I put in quotation marks, "dick" afterwards.
Yes.
He has all this power, but yet he can't help this kid with a little fever.
He's a magic user. He's not a cleric or a druid. He cannot heal.
He's the professor from Gilligan's Island. He can build nuclear reactors with coconuts, but cannot build a boat.
Yeah, well, dumbass. Then DM says, "The only cure is the foot of a yellow dragon." Eric snaps with, "Oh, great. What are we supposed to do? Waltz up to a yellow dragon and ask to borrow its foot?"
Wah, wah, wah.
Sheila jumps in with, "Where can we find this dragon?" DM, walking away at this point, of course.
He looks like he has an evil smirk on his face, too.
Yeah, I know. Was he not going to tell them, by the way, where to find it? I mean, he was kind of walking away from it at this point. And he goes, "To the north, in the Garden of Queen Zin."
Yeah.
So the group just blindly starts heading north as Eric starts complaining about being hungry again, because that's what they were doing in the beginning of the episode, looking for food.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to a nice green pasture with a large Disney-like logo castle. Come on, tell me that doesn't look like a Disney castle in the background.
It did.
Yes, it did.
No doubt.
Then we cut to the inside of the castle where we see a woman sitting on one of two thrones. We find out this is Queen Zin as a phantom stalker, as we find out.
Yep. It is.
Smokes his way into the room from the ceiling, which I didn't realize phantom stalkers moved around like smoke like that, but that was kind of cool how they did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dug it.
But you could find more about him in the Fiendfolio if you need to look him up.
Yep. Page 72.
And he looks pretty much close to what he looks like in the book, so good job. Yeah. The stalker says, "A suitable knight has entered the realm, one who is fit to be your king." So we kind of get an idea what's going on here with this empty throne next to her, right? I mean, you know.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And she's you know, an attractive
woman.
She's
good looking, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Very attractive. So think about that. She's got an empty throne. She's a hot chick. And then the stalker says, "A suitable knight to be your king."
There you go.
What do we think here? There's something wrong with this chick right away. She must be crazy.
Yeah, it's always the crazy chick that's hot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Zin wants to be really sure this this knight is suitable for her and says, wants to know if he could survive the trial of the worm. Ooh, which is kind of interesting, but I wish they did more on it.
Ooh.
The stalker thinks the magic weapons Dungeon Master gave the knight should allow him to survive. Zin then demands the stalker bring the knight to her ASAP for marriage, so her spell will be broken.
Mm-hmm.
Or as time is running out and she will lose her throne. So I'm thinking, Eric is the knight? Give me a break.
No.
Yeah.
Well, he's got the shiny armor. If you were to take the 8x10, he does look the part.
So we find out hot chick needs a husband, has a spell on her. So what is she up to? Is she evil? Is she good? We don't know at this point yet. We just know that she has a spell.
I'll break that spell.
Yeah, at the end of the episode, I don't think you want to break the spell, but whatever.
Yeah, I know.
So then we cut back to the group. Hank is holding Bobby as they walk through the jungle. I'm surprised he didn't need another rest again, but anyway. And Presto questions if this is the right way or not, questioning Hank's ranger ability again. But Hank just says, we just need to keep heading north. That's his answer. Just keep heading north. Trust me.
North, Miss Tessmacher. North.
Yes. Eric gets annoyed again and complains about being hungry again. And it just says, I'm just going to go get some food.
Yeah.
And they're just like, all right, whatever. And they just let him wander off. And he finds a bag of food. Which makes me crack up. It looks like a grocery bag of food from the grocery store, the way they drew it.
Yeah.
In which he's like, bag of food. Anybody's food? Nobody answer my food.
Yep.
So he just basically takes it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying to myself, gee, nothing fishy about you looking for food and finding a whole bag of fresh food. I don't know. And then a pig man shows up and taps Eric on the shoulder as he freaks out. And Hank,
pig man? I thought he looked like a horse.
Yeah, I said he looked like a pig to me, but yeah, maybe a horse.
And he talks like this, or kind of sort of.
Yeah, he talks like a really weird person.
Roar, he talks like this.
So he taps Eric on the shoulder and he freaks out, and Hank comes running like a shiny knight in armor and shoots it with his bow. Oh, no, he goes to shoot it with the bow, but the creature says, no, don't shoot. I mean you no harm. Of course, Eric says he's lying. Let him have it. And the creature says, no, he was going to steal my food, and picks up the food bag from Eric. Hank lowers his bow.
I just went for groceries.
I just stopped at Pathmark, and I got my groceries, and I had to stop to take a dump.
He looks like the kind of guy that would say that.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, I know. He looks like an anteater.
Yeah. Oh, maybe he's Jackie Mason. Hey, I'm going to eat those ants.
maybe he's Cerebus. Remember Cerebus the Aardvark?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes. We find out he doesn't need the food. He has plenty. And oh, yeah, his name is Solaris, the way he sounds it when he first said it, I thought it was Sir Lars, which turns out to be anyway, but it's Solaris.
I thought it was Sir Lars.
It is Sir Lars, but if you look at the script, it's Solaris. Solaris put together.
That's terrible.
Yes. And I'm thinking to myself, Sir Lars? I had to listen to it 4 or 5 times to get this, if it was Sir Lars, Solaris, Solaris. And I went, screw this. I looked at the script online. It's Solaris.
With my childhood said Sir Lars.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he is Sir Lars.
Yeah, it's both.
Yeah. Presto then grabs the food eagerly and starts passing it around the bag to everybody but Eric, and they all start eating. And Eric gets a little annoyed, of course. The group eats as the horse/pigman says Bobby is too ill to move and should rest. Tells them he can rest in his house and points to the left, and we see some weird-looking stone cave house. How did they miss this house, by the way?
Hank the Ranger.
It was literally, like, right there. Like, he points to his left, like, there's my house, and they're like, oh, duh.
Yeah, the grocery bag was probably sitting in front of it.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Because Hank is the best ranger in the world, man.
He tracked himself nowhere.
Yes. He couldn't track himself out of a wet paper bag.
Ooh, that's some fighting words, man.
Oh, bring it, animated character Hank.
Willie Ames is going to come after you, buddy.
Oh, was Bible Man or Hank? Which one?
Anyway, Sheila opts to stay with Bobby as the group mentions they need to go to the garden. The pig guy, the horse guy, freaks out and says, "There's nothing but evil there." The group convinces him to tell him where the garden is located. He says, "Beyond the dark forest, beyond the valley of the smoke, that'll be the way," and points to the left again. Everything's to the left. It's like,
exit stage left.
The group leaves as Bobby, Sheila, and stupid Uni stay behind. Thank God. I have to hear Uni for a while. No sound effect, Nick?
Well.
Was that a no?
Well.
Okay. Now we cut to, like, a valley of sorts, and we see some smoke coming from holes in the ground. I guess it's a plains with, like, what do you call those? Volcanic holes? Yeah, I'm thinking that's what it was. And of course, there is a fork in the road. And it looks like a yellow brick path and fork of something. It's just weird looking. The group discusses the situation, saying Solars did not mention a fork in the road. Eric, with the voice of reason, as always, says, "Knew we couldn't trust that creep. He's probably selling Bobby and Sheila to Venger right now as we speak." Diana starts getting worried and asks if they should start going back. And then DM shows up and exclaims, "No, no, always go forward. Just follow the road to the south." Which Eric snaps with, "Well, why didn't you tell us that before?" And then DM just goes, "You didn't ask.
You didn't ask."
The group starts heading off, and Hank says, "Hold on. Didn't you notice something strange about Dungeon Master?" Yeah. And then this is the best line. Eric says, "Strange? We're walking through a valley of smoke looking for pickled dragon's feet. What's strange about that?"
I know. That was awesome.
Hank and Eric then make note of this being way too straightforward. So Eric goes, "Hey, DM buddy, old pal. You're normally a dick. Why are you being so straightforward?" And he says, "Let me ask you a question, buddy, old pal of mine." And he says, "Of course." He says, "What name did you give me when you gave me the shield?" DM could not. Did you notice this now at 8 minutes and 20 seconds when DM could not answer the question? He screams like Uni. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I think that was just Uni off camera.
or the DM is also Uni.
No, that wouldn't make sense. Uni and DM on the screen at the same time.
No. Just don't go there.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, Matt. Does. Sorry, your theory is null and void. But he screams like Uni. I listened to it 3 times to make sure. I'm like, why is he screaming like Uni?
I think Uni was like going, "Yeah." Yeah, DM.
He's all of a sudden a 20s mobster.
From 20 to 30, maybe 50 miles away? I mean, come on. Okay. That must have been some type of mistake, or they were just really cheap on sounds at that point, so they were just like, just throw in a Uni sound, no one notice.
Yeah.
And then the real, I'm going to put in quotes, DM shows up and congratulates the group for not falling for the imposter. The DMs have a battle, as the group gets confused on who the real DM is at this point, because they both have powers, apparently, and I guess a stalker has the ability to mimic the DM.
I got nothing.
I don't know.
Remember last episode, they went very liberal on the Skeleton Warrior from the Fiend Folio, so I'm assuming the same thing here.
Finally, Hank makes a decision and shoots an arrow, as usual, at the bad DM as it wraps around him, and we see him morph into the Stalker, who screams something about, you know, being useless, and, you know, that's not really, you're gonna be sorry because I'm the real DM, and leaves. DM just says, walks up to Hank, says, "How did you know which one was the fake one?" And Hank says, "Easy. You told us to use force to defend ourselves, and the fake one had you on the ground and started to attack you." Which DM looks rather impressed. Then Presto asks DM, "Which is the right road?" The DM says, "The road is not to the left," he replies, in which Eric says, "That's the real Dungeon Master, all right." The group takes the fork to the right, and DM says, "Good luck," and whispers, "You'll need it. You'll
need it."
And then he evil laughs, morphing into a stalker. So now there's two stalkers.
Yeah, there's two stalkers.
I thought that was awesome. I'm like, aha. I remember when I first saw that, I'm like, nice little twist.
Yes.
Not M. Night Shyamalan and Lamala Ding Dong twist, but still.
Oh, I did want to mention that when the real DM did show up, he did mention his name is Cavalier. So that stalker knew his name, but the other one did not. So, you know.
Or they were playing dumb.
Maybe.
You know?
I don't know. We cut back to the Pigman's Horseman's house real quick to check in on Bobby getting so much more worse. Bobby complaining and being about cold, so Solaris goes and gets more wood across the room. Meanwhile, Sheila invades his privacy, rummaging through his stuff to find a blanket. She opens this like really cool treasure chest, which reveals a royal crown and robes. And he's like, "Rah, never touch that!" And he snaps at her and slams it closed.
So that's where you keep the dead bodies.
Yeah. And then Sheila wants to know where a creature like Solaris, what he's doing with a knight's robes and crown, which he tells her they belong to someone gone now, never to return. And then he deflects to, you know, put the blanket on Bobby. You know. So that's the end of that scene. We cut back to the group, who's literally at the end of the path with nowhere to go, confused.
Literally end of the road there.
Yeah, literally, it's the end of the road looking at sand.
Well, no, they are at a Zen garden.
Well, we'll find that out in a second.
Yes. I was just amused that the Garden of Zen looks like a Zen garden.
Well, yeah, Garden of Zen, Zen. Close enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Eric says, if this is the garden, someone needs to fire the gardener as he's starting to pick up sand and drop the dirt or whatever back down to the ground. And all of a sudden these creepy, like, you know, tentacles come out of the ground and easily capture the group.
It's Cthulhu!
Yeah, that's what I was thinking right there. Mm-hmm. DM shows up and asks, trouble, young ones? As usual.
Yoda?
Yeah. Are you trouble, young ones? Yeah. The group is happy to see him, and Eric says, get us out of here! And the DM says, and no. Just like that. A little snotty no.
Just like, screw you guys.
And then we get, like, a zoom-in anime shot of the group, like, stunned at the answer. And then we see DM morph into the stalker as Hank says, it's the imposter again! Then Eric says, that's the real DM over there, as we see another DM show up, and he says, your observation skills have improved greatly, but unfortunately, they still leave much to be desired.
Much to be desired.
Yeah. Sounds like he's vomiting while doing that. Wow, Nick. And he morphs into the other stalker. Perhaps you will not pass the trial of the worms after all, as the group gets pulled under the sand by the worms.
Sandworms, so they're on Arrakis.
Possibly.
Doom.
Or Tatooine.
Desert planet. Cut back to the Disney castle. As we see the two stalkers. Come on, it looks like a Disney castle.
It does. I'm froze at 11:38. Yeah.
It looks like the stereotypical
Cinderella's
Disney
castle.
Yeah, yeah. As we see the two stalkers, smoke fly into Zin's chamber and say, all is going as planned. And Zin says, then the knight will face the trial of the worms? Soon, the stalker says, as we cut to the underground tunnel as the group is let go from the worms and the group talks about where they are and what's next. As, of course, you know, Eric comes flying out of there after they do, bumbling. They decide to make the best of it. Yeah?
Yeah, he falls from the top, yes.
Yeah, I think he got caught on something and then kind of went
bonk. And bonk.
Yeah. Comedy. Then they decide to make the best of it and find a way out to find a cure for Bobby. We cut back to Solara's house. We find out he's some type of wizard or potion maker, and we see tons of weird purple potions. Maybe he makes Pepto-Bismol on the side. I don't know. That's what it looked like to me. My Lanta.
He's indigestion.
Yeah. He'll give you indigestion. Anyway, Sheila starts asking questions and gets shoved away, like, kind of. And he went, sorry, this spell makes me lose control. Spell, you say? We'll maybe things are starting to come a little clearer here, right? No, not yet. As Nick is pouring another bowl of cereal at this point.
Yes.
So we find out he's under some spell in which no one can help him anymore. Cut back to the tunnel. That ends that scene. The group is walking. We hear a roar of something. Suddenly, we see a giant worm show up and attack the group. A purple worm! Yay!
Yay, purple worm.
Look in the monster manual if you want to know more.
Monster manual, everybody.
Yep. But Diana quickly figures out if you jump on its back and smack it with your staff a few times, it'll tame the worm, because that's what she does.
That would be something a ranger would know, but hey.
I don't know. She's just like, hey, look, smack, smack, go here. And it's just like, okay, I'll go through to that. It's like, really? That's all it takes to tame a worm? Whatever.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Told you, you're riding a worm.
Yep.
It's Doom.
Yeah. Post-apocalyptic. Yep. It works as the group gets on the worm and Diana orders it to go up. The worm goes up and takes them to the surface. I'm kind of curious how they were able to withstand the ground, as the worm is only so big. He wasn't making extra space for it, but, you know, cartoon.
Because it's cartoon, right.
Yeah. And they land about a mile away from the Disney castle when they come out of the sand. Soon as they are about to leave and like, let's go check out that castle, the stalkers show up and smoke form and tell them, you have survived the trial of the worms. Queen Zin requests your presence at once and engulfs them and takes them off.
Yes.
They appear back in the throne room, which Zin explains nicely that she is happy and has chosen Eric to be her new king to rule the realm with her.
He's like, yeah.
Well, not at first. At first, no. Eric refuses, but then quickly comes around as the queen shows him crowns and jewels, telling him, why not let them keep searching and you could share the wealth of the throne with me? Because Eric complains, well, I have to find my way home, you know. And then Eric basically says, well, if he's going to be stuck here, why not live here in style? Of course he would say that, right?
Mm-hmm. Not that she's like hot or anything. It's all the bling.
Yeah, it's all the blame, not the hotness, of course. And then Diana goes, right. Duh, Bobby, sick. And then Eric's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Asked him about the dragon's foot, and she's like, oh, okay. And she's like, follow me. And she leads him into the middle of the garden where we see a dragon plant, and she pulls the berry off the... She's like, this is the dragon, and this is his foot, the bottom of the plant. She pulls off a berry and gives it
to
Hank.
Did she pull off a berry, or... she scraped off the foot. I don't know.
It looked like a berry to me. I guess so.
Or like a, I don't know.
A chunk
of
it?
A bloom.
I don't know what it was. I thought it was a berry, but it could be a bloom. It could be a chunk of the foot. I don't know. Animation too poor. The group leaves and waves goodbye as Hank mentions, we had to get back to Solara's house. Zin overhears this. He did it just like that, too.
She's like, Solara's?
Yeah. She gets annoyed and tells the stalkers to prevent them from getting to him. We now cut to the group walking in the forest again, and then the stalkers show up and say, this path is off limits. And which they're like, oh, gee, all right, we'll turn around because it's off limits.
Attack!
And then they just go, attack! And they just, a battle ensues. Presto attempts hat magic, but gets scared and shoves the hat on the stalker's head. In the middle of doing a spell, does not count.
Damn it.
I'm going to have to say that's a failure because he started doing it and then he just goes and throws a hat on the stalker's head. What do you think, Matt?
All right. Not useful.
Not useful.
No.
The commotion attracts Solaris and Sheila, who happen to be, I guess, right around the tree again. And Solaris knows. That's danger. That must be Queen Zin. No, he doesn't actually say that. But my friends, they're in trouble, which he automatically equates these sounds to Queen Zin. So,
right.
We cut back to the coronation or wedding or whatever, which turns out to be a bit more complex than Eric was expecting. He does say I do to being the husband and king, but the ceremony also asks him to pledge to protect the kingdom from dragons and barbarian invaders and to perform the ritual dance with the Serpent of Fire to battle the giant two-headed ogre and Eric's like, whoa, what are you doing?
Whoa.
And the guy's like, it's just merely part of the ceremony. So we cut back to the group who is fighting and in some serious help. Solaris grabs a potion and throws it at the stalkers, which turns them into stone. So what is he making? Turn to stone potions? Mm-hmm. Sheila runs over and hugs Solaris with such glee and joy that a tear falls down her cheek and lands on his snout. This is why I thought he was a pig, because it was a snout. But whatever. The group runs back to Bobby because now they have the cure. We see a glowing light around Solaris as he comes in to the room, all handsome and dressed fully in king gear. Where the hell did that come from?
Well,
that chest.
But when did he was outside?
They were so intently watching Bobby die.
Yeah.
So okay. Didn't
know and the tear scene was awfully reminiscent of Anna and Elsa from the end of Frozen.
Yes, but yeah, that didn't happen yet. But yeah.
Right. Yeah. So Frozen stole it from that.
Yeah.
That moment in time between Solaris.
Stop it.
They stole it for Frozen.
Oh, anyway. So, according to your theories here, he was outside, quickly ran inside, grabbed his robes and crown, ran back outside to make a grand entrance into the room while changing into Sir Lawrence, as we figure out, heir to the throne of the Kingdom of Xin. And he's a handsome king. Yay. We find out that his sister cast a spell on him, and now the spell was broken, and she will now turn into the creature. We cut to Eric with a giant smile on his face, and we see the queen turn into a pig, or a pig-like creature. And Eric runs, dropping everything, saying, "I quit!" Once he sees she's not hot anymore.
No.
Faith?
She's like, "Oh, no! No!"
We fade back into the castle, and we find out now the king is in his rightful place. He has asked Sheila to be his queen, and she respectfully says, "No way, Jose." As she and her friends need to find a way out of this realm. After all the hard work is done, Dungeon Master arrives to praise Sheila's decision not to marry King Lawrence. "You have seen the true person beneath his monstrous appearance," he says. Eric, angry at Dungeon Master, says, "Speaking of which, I see right through you, Mr. Imposter," as he grabs the DM's pendant.
He grabs DM. I'm like, dude.
You don't grab the DM, dude.
Never.
When DM claims that he's the real deal, Eric says, "Well, if you're the real Dungeon Master, then I'm a blue-nosed baboon."
Baboon.
And of course, Dungeon Master's magic pendant turns him into a blue-nosed baboon.
And DM says, "A blue-nosed baboon? What a strange choice."
The group laughs, and Eric turns back. End of episode.
Yes. The end.
Side note, first episode we've seen with no Venger.
You're right.
Yes.
Yeah. Notice that at the very end, I said to myself, no Venger
There's
whatsoever.
No Venger.
Yeah.
Venger. You're actually expanding upon the realm here.
Yes, with a heavy Disney influence, because we also had a little Beauty and the Beast thrown in there.
Well, it is the post-apocalyptic Florida, so.
Yeah.
I have a couple links I'm going to throw in, one being the one about, that was from our email, about the complainer thing from the 80s, talking about the writer's perspective of why he had to shoehorn this in. Also, another link that I found on Amazon called The Grand Tour of the Forgotten Realms, written by Jeff Grubb. It's a comic book addressing the kids as they're all grown up in the realm.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't know it existed. It came out in 96. I was looking up stuff for this show episode, and someone mentioned this comic book, so I started looking around for it, and I found it on Amazon. And then I looked up the name, did a little more digging on that, and supposedly it addresses the kids in their older age. I guess they apparently never escaped, according to what Jeff Grubb wrote. So, yeah. So the last episode, even though it was written and performed, it never happened. So, whatever.
Or maybe they got sucked back in.
Knowing them, they probably did. Hank probably led them back in.
Oh, yeah. It was like as soon as they got home, they hopped back on the coaster.
Wait, I left my wallet on the coaster.
It was 1996, so maybe it was, "Hey, look, it's an advanced Dungeons & Dragons." No, I'm kidding.
Yes. Second edition.
Let's go. And Eric's like, "Oh, come
no,
on,
No, we're going to play Magic the Gathering."
Yes.
All the cool kids are playing that now.
Oh my god, I remember that back in the 90s. It was like, we can play some magic. Let's go down to the store and play some magic. And I was always like, geek poker.
I got caught up in that arms race, too.
We always made fun of it saying geek poker, even though we were the geeks, too, playing D&D. But yeah, different story, different time. I mean, like geeks made fun of geeks. Yeah, they were the lower form of geeks, you know. And I also have a video that goes over the 12 known and unknown facts about the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. If you watch the cartoon before in its entirety, you pretty much know all the facts. Maybe there's maybe like one thing in there. I was like, huh, I forgot about that.
So Presto did nothing with his hat that was useful in this episode?
Absolutely not.
Nope.
He was a waste of space.
Yep, pretty much. I agree.
So this... this episode could easily be turned into an adventure. You following the exact format of this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The DM could be replaced by a tour guide of some sorts, maybe.
I didn't think you would need that.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess if you don't want to add that in, but if you want to add the aspect.
You could easily strip that out and just have the have it as is. They get sent to the Zen Garden, fall down the hole, and boom, worm.
Yeah, true. But yeah, you can easily just cookie cutter this into an entire adventure wrapped around the same plot. Have one of the characters, or even an NPC, for example. You can start the adventure off with an NPC being attacked by this turtle creature. And the group has to go rescue them, and then the person gets bitten, and then the person's like, oh, it's my daughter, and she's gonna die, I need the cure, and he's like, oh, I'll go to the Garden of Zin, I heard that the dragon's Yellowfoot's the only thing that can cure it, and then there's your adventure.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Or you could even just keep this in the old bag of tricks for if someone were to get poisoned at some point through some other means, and this is the side quest they gotta go on for it.
Yes. That's perfect, yeah. Even better. Cut out the dragon turtle altogether. Hey, it's a poison. Here's what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. You know? Side quest.
you can add everything, including the whole king queen thing, if you want to. Well, minus the wedding part, but you can all add that all in. So yeah, good episode. I liked this episode. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
You guys,
yeah. It's a good one.
All right.
And I didn't notice that until you mentioned it. It's like, oh my god, yeah. There's no Venger in this.
Yeah.
One.
First episode, we have no sign of Venger at all.
Huh.
Hopes and dreams of going home?
Dashed.
Yeah. It's like they like find ways and then they...
Yeah, and in fact, the whole episode wasn't even about going home. It was about helping Bobby.
Yeah. So.
So.
Dungeon Master, Dick, all along, because...
Oh, yeah.
Dungeon Master, as we find out later on, has the ability to send them home, but just doesn't do it.
Yeah.
He's such a dick.
Yeah, because he wants to torture them. That's why.
Yeah, it makes you wonder who's evil.
Yeah. Venger's probably the good guy. We just don't know it. He's misunderstood. Maybe right. Venger just wants to go home, too.
Yeah, Venger's been trying to fight the DM to free the children. And if he could get their weapons, he could defeat the DM and send the children home. But no, the DM manipulates.
Now, that's an M. Night plot twist if I ever heard one.
Right? All right.
Well, have you watched Requiem? It was the actual final episode. They didn't film it. They made it into like an action motion comic.
No.
You ever find that on YouTube? You gotta watch it.
Yeah, I have it. I just haven't watched it yet because I'm waiting to watch it everything in sequence for the show. So I'm trying not to jump ahead.
Okay, I won't. No spoiler then.
All right. Well, we're going to say tell us your ideas, rfistaff@gmail.com, or head over on Facebook at RFI Podcast and let us know what you think about this episode as it's posted. Good night, everybody.
Roll for initiative.